Hi, this is Herb Montgomery with Renewed Heart Ministries, and I welcome you to this week's weekly podcast. Our feature text this week is one that is familiar to Renewed Heart Ministries. It's Matthew 5, 44 through 45, and I want to give you a little bit of history this week, a little bit of background on why this passage is so meaningful. Here Jesus says, I say unto you, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good. He sends rain on the righteous and on the unrighteous. Now, if I could attribute to any of the words of Jesus, if I could credit anything that Jesus ever said or is attributed to Jesus ever saying, if I could credit the awakenings in my heart 22 years ago, to a radically different picture of God from that which was being presented by my religious community at that time, it would have to be these words right here. I was going to high school in New England. It was a boarding school. I was about 16 years old, and through a series of events, I found myself one morning, very early in the morning, over at a friend's house, and before I knew it, I was alone with God, on my knees, and tears were streaming down my cheeks. And I'll explain to you what I mean by that, but I was experiencing, and I didn't know what to call it back then, but I was experiencing something very close to what Peter called an ecstasis in Acts 10, verse 10. And up until that moment, the God that I had been endeavoring to obey, that was my biggest desire, which is to obey this God. In my mind's eye, this God was a chiefly retributive God, a strict adherence to a system of reward and punishment, punitively. And what I received early that morning was an encounter with a God who revealed himself to me as one who had never, at any stage of my life, responded to me, nor to my actions, retributively, punitively, but had at each step of the way been endeavoring to save me, to restore me, to heal me, even before and outside of any consciousness on my own of any need for being restored or saved or helped, as well as long before any requests on my part for any of those things as well, any request for salvation. This was a God who I was beginning to see felt deep love and even endearment for me, a God moved by such love and endearment to have been convinced long before I was of saving me and of healing me, and was interested in me long before I was interested in him taking an interest in me, if that makes sense. This was a God who was just giving to me because he loved, with no strings attached. As soon as this came home, though, the pendulum was so tied. It was so bound up on one side of the religious experience 32 years ago, or 22 years ago. How old am I? Yeah, 22 years ago. No, 20. Yeah, 22 years ago. That I would not easily be convinced. I was quite convinced that God was punitive, that he was strictly a practicer of reward and punishment. And I had been entrenched in a religious experience that also was very retributive or punitive, and maintained that picture of God. And my heart immediately fought back. And I remember praying, okay, God, let's just say I take this life that you're giving me, and I use it to, instead of following you, I use it to become your enemy. And this is what I prayed this morning. I remember it as if it was yesterday. I prayed, what if I just take this life you're giving me, and I use you, and use this life for just selfish aims, or worse, let's say I take this life and I use it to curse you and persecute those who follow you. And what if I take this life that you're giving me and choose to be your enemy? And remember, I was deeply entrenched in the lie that only the belief in a retributive God was powerful enough to affect the choices that one makes in their life. And so if you're taking that picture of God away, then I'm going to press on it. I'm going to test it. You know, okay, fine. Then what if I do choose to rebel now? Well, what's that going to look like? In a voice that I remember being as clear as if someone was talking to me sitting across a table, as bizarre as that may sound. God said to me, and this was from his perspective, he said, if you choose to take my love and the life that I'm giving you vainly and choose to hate me in response, I'll continue to be good to you. If you choose to spend the rest of your life cursing me, I will bless you nonetheless for it. If you choose to simply use me and my love and this life for your own self-centered agendas, I will continue to intercede for you, leaning into that intercession for you with greater intensity and greater intent. In short, Herbie, if you choose to take this life and become my enemy, I will love you and continue to love you all the more, because I am a God who is not interested in punishing my enemies, but a God who loves and wants to restore, heal, and save my enemies. And it was at that moment that I experienced just a life-changing, transforming breakthrough deep within my own thoughts and feelings concerning God. I remember falling to my knees and the tears just began to flow down my cheeks as I knelt there alone with this God, no longer afraid of how he would treat me if I did not obey, but rather I was experiencing a deep, heart-overwhelming awe and wonder about how this God would treat me if I didn't obey, how his love would be that big. I was just in awe. And what happened next was the defining moment of my life. I reasoned out that if this God was going to love me and give me life and bless me, whether I served this God or not, in that moment my heart was overcome by really only one option. I was feeling, what else could I do? And my response was singular. The only response I could make was to respond to this God that was this in love with me, to respond by taking this life that this God had given me, no strings attached, just because he loves me, and to give it back to that God, offering the rest of my life to helping others see what kind of a person this God really was. I had never seen God like this before, and I had a hunch, and it was just the beginning of a journey that I am still on, but I had a hunch there that there might be others like me who this God longed to be seen by them. And it was to this aim that I would dedicate the rest of my life. And really, I mean, not to sound all cliche, but it's the reason that I'm talking to you right now even. What does it mean to truly encounter the God that Jesus spoke of, that he taught us about, as well as the love of this God, as truly being as indiscriminate as the sun shining or the falling rain, like we looked at Matthew 5:44 and 45 again. It says he makes his sun rise on the evil and the good. He treats them both the same. He sends rain on the righteous and on the unrighteous. It's indiscriminate. This is what overwhelmed me, that he would love me and bless me whether I was evil or good. He would love me, do good to me, intercede for me whether I was righteous or unrighteous. That his treatment toward me was based on what was in his heart toward me, not based on my performance outward or inward. And in Luke's gospel, Luke goes a step further than Matthew and doesn't even compare the two, righteous and unrighteous. He only mentions the unrighteous when he says, or Matthew's unrighteous, when he says that God is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. And a passage that is raised often and has been thrown at me for years to try to counter this radically different picture of God is a parable that Jesus told of the sheep and the goats. And some will say, well, see, there's going to come a day when God finally stops treating both the same, and he treats these groups very differently. And if this were true, it would lose nothing by closer investigation. So we want to closely investigate it this week and take a look. It is true that different children need related to in different ways at different times by their parents. And there are some differences in the way that the sheep and the goats are treated in this passage. But the question I want you to be pondering, and that I want to ask you as we look at the evidence, is whether or not there's a difference in the intended outcome within the heart of God toward the sheep and the goats in this passage. And let's look at the phrase normally used. Matthew 25:46 says, they will go into eternal punishment, talking about the goats, but the righteous, the sheep, to eternal life. Now, the Greek word that Matthew chose to place in the mouth of Jesus for punishment here, this eternal punishment, is kolossos. And I don't want you to hear this from me. I don't want anyone to even be tempted to think that I'm making this up. So I'm going to quote the Greek scholar Joseph Henry Thayer from his Thayer's Greek and English Lexicon of the New Testament, one of the most trusted lexicons out there. Anyone who's just getting into Greek, this is one of the first lexicons that would be recommended to them. The two Greek words that Matthew could have chosen for punishment here were either timoria or kolossos, and Matthew chose kolossos instead of timoria. And this is what Dr. Thayer states. The noted definition of Aristotle, that's a contemporary use of these words, and this is how Greek worked back then. The noted definition of Aristotle, which distinguishes kolossos from timoria, is that which is disciplinary and has reference to him who suffers, while the latter, timoria, is penal and has a reference to the satisfaction of him who inflicts. Now, there are exceptions to these, but in most occurrences in the ancient world, kolossos, which comes from the root word which means to prune, is restorative in nature. And it's talking about a disciplining, a punishing that's for the purpose of restoring the one, healing the one who is going through the kolossos. While timora is more punitive and penal and is about satisfying something which is inside of the person inflicting the punishment. And Mounts, in Mounts' Concise Greek-English Dictionary of the New Testament, he also agrees with this. God's heart towards both the sheep and the goats, what I want you to notice about this is that it's the same. Although the goats require kolossos, where the sheep do not, God's goal is to restore, to heal, and to save. Now, before we run off and start making wild accusations about me, whether any of the goats will respond to the kolossos of God in the way that God desires isn't stated, isn't spoken by Jesus in the parable. We don't know how it ends for the goats here. But what I want you to see is that what God sends the goats into is not timoria, but kolossos. It's worth noting, too, that the Pharisees, who were the theologically liberal, and some think of them as conservative, and when it comes to the law of Moses, they were legalistically conservative, or the Torah, but theologically they were the liberal group of Jesus' day. They had embraced a belief in a conscious eternal torment, post-mortem torment. And many scholars today believe this isn't found in ancient Judaism, but was a belief which entered into Jewish thinking through the influence of Hellenism and the Greeks during that time. But the words the Pharisees used to describe their belief in post-mortem eternal torment was adios timora. Now, adios is eternal in duration or time, and timora is a punitive punishment. Remember about satisfying something within the one inflicting the punishment, that something in them that needs satisfied. Matthew subversively places two subtly different Greek words in the mouth of Jesus. He calls it aeonian kolossos. Now, aeonian is eternal as well, but not necessarily in time or duration, but in quality or nature. Aeonian is used in lots of contexts, both biblical and extra-biblical, to describe things that were eternal in nature but didn't last for eternity. And kolossos, again, we've already established this, is not a punitive punishment, but a restorative one, one that is a restorative discipline. Punishment is actually not the most accurate way to describe this. Now, it's also interesting to note, too, that we're not alone in this discovery. Within the catacomb of Priscilla, there's a very intriguing rendition of this parable. And the catacomb of Priscilla is it's in Rome, in Italy, and is situated in what was a quarry during Roman times. And this quarry was used for Christian burials from the late 2nd century all the way up into the 4th century. And within this catacomb, we find ancient Christian wall paintings, like with most catacombs. And the puzzlement that we find here is when we get to the painting called The Good Shepherd in the Catacomb of Priscilla. And just as in Matthew 25, in this painting, the Good Shepherd, the sheep, just like Matthew 25, are to the shepherd's right, and the goats are to the shepherd's left. But what has raised the most questions is that on the shoulders of the shepherd himself, we don't find him carrying his lost sheep, but quite to the contrary, we find him carrying his lost goat. And this would have been during a time when Christians needed to be reminded of this, one of the central tenets of Christ's teachings, which was enemy love, that every person is sacred, even the goats too, and that what is in the heart of the God for the goats is just the same as what's in the heart of God for the sheep. And today there are three paradigms that presently exist within Christianity when you deal with Matthew 25. For those who believe that the fate of the goats will be torment, I'm quite sure that the Colossus of God is not going to be pleasurable. It's for a redemptive purpose, but these people have placed themselves into a reality where they need Colossus. The psychological realities of Stalin and Hitler and others who come to see what they've done will not be a pleasure cruise. And for those who believe the fate of the goats will be annihilation, that's the second camp that's out there today, I am quite sure that that everything that is out of harmony with Christ's kingdom will be consumed. Sinners and sin will be no more. And we don't know what that'll look like, but we do know that this is all going to come to an end. And for those who are endeavoring to reconcile the restorative justice that Jesus attributes to the Father rather than the humanly intuitive, retributive, or retributive justice, I'm quite sure that God's intent in the end will be just what it always has been for both the sheep and the goats: restoration, healing, and salvation. Again, the parable leaves whether or not any of the goats will respond, whether they'll respond to the Colossus, it leaves it unstated, which is where the debates come in. You have debates over whether or not anyone will respond at that point. But that's not the point this week. The point I want you to see is that the difference between the sheep and the goats in Matthew 25 is not in what is in God's heart for either of them, but rather the difference is in what God must needs do to save both. And I'll close this week with a depiction of the Great Shepherd in Revelation 19. In Revelation 19:15, it says, "Coming out of his mouth is a sharp sword with which to strike down the nations, and he will shepherd those nations with a staff of iron." In Revelation 3:19, it says, "Those whom I love, I rebuke and I discipline." And according to Jesus, there's no more us and them in the heart of God. God loves, he blesses, he does good, intercedes, seeks to restore, save, and heal, even the goats. Heart group application this week: how we see others directly affects how we treat them, and how we perceive that God thinks and feels towards them affects how we treat them even more. This week, I want you to prayerfully take some time to meditate on the picture in the Catacomb of Priscilla that I've mentioned in this e-site. You can find it at the link in the e-site this week, the written version. This is the podcast version, but you can find it in the written version. It's commons.wikimedia.org/wiki/file:// good_shepherd_catacomb_catacomb_of_priscilla.jpg. If you can't remember that, or if that doesn't work for you, just go to go to our website, renewedheartministries.com, look up this week's e-site and grab the link from there. But what I want you to be asking as you prayerfully meditate on this picture this week is what is it as you look at this picture that Jesus is saying to you? And number two, I've been accused at times of possessing a dysfunction inside of me. They say through things that I possibly have experienced in my life that give me a disposition to need to seek a God who is more restorative, to preach about a more restorative picture of God, as if a restorative picture of God isn't really found within the teachings of Jesus, but is superimposed on Jesus' teachings from those who have some deep-seated drive for a God who looks like that. And I could not disagree more. Actually, the events in my early life, if you listen to my story this week, actually drove me toward a more retributive picture of God, a more punitive picture of God. And God, through Jesus, actually saved me from that. What I'd like you to consider this week instead is what's inside of you that needs God to be retributive. What's inside of you that needs someone somewhere to be punished? What is it inside of you toward those who have hurt you that you need a retributive, punitive God out there to justify the existence of whatever it is in your heart towards them? And what is it inside of you that you must have God's wrath and his judgment and his punishment always interpreted punitively rather than restoratively? It doesn't say that everyone's going to respond. We don't know. What it does say is that what's in his heart is the desire to love and heal and restore. And what is this reluctance within each of us, I think, really, to forgive? And what is it that you're afraid of? And then I want you to take all of the answers to these questions. I want you to submit each one of them one by one to Jesus in your daily prayer time this week, and take time to sit with Jesus this week and allow him to guide you through a little bit of introspection about each one. And then number three, if you feel comfortable, some of what is revealed may be too intimate, but others, I think, will encourage others. So whatever it is that Jesus shares with you, I want you to share that this week with your upcoming heart group. And wherever this finds you this week, keep living in love, loving like Christ, till the only world that remains is a world where Christ's love reigns. I love you guys. We'll see you next week.